This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
882 is now the total for Alex Ovechkin after yesterday's hat trick in a 7-3 win over Edmonton. They outscored the Penguins and Edmonton Oilers in back-to-back days 15-6. Like, the team itself is a major story right now, but Ovechkin's chasing down Gretzky is the top story. He's 13 away, 12 away from tying, 13 away from setting the mark. We are glad to have back one of our favorites on the show as a guest, Joe Beninati, the longtime voice of the Capitals on the Monumental Sports Network. You can follow Joe on X on Twitter, at JoeBPXP. So I know that you have kind of looked at the schedule probably, you know, yesterday after he got to within 13, and you're looking at the day and whether or not you're going to have the game. So give me the Joe Beninati game in which he sets the mark prediction.
Oh, the agony, the agony. it's an agony for me and for the network.
Right.
It's an absolutely splendid situation to try and forecast it for the player. And isn't it interesting, Kevin? I mean, you mentioned how well they produced, the team did in the first two games back from the Four Nations faceoff break. He doesn't have a single point in an 8-goal performance against Pittsburgh, which has never happened in the 20 seasons of his career. Have the Caps ever done that well in an individual game without any production from number 8? And then he turns around and bags a hat trick, and the discussion comes right back.
Yeah.
In the third period, as soon as Edmonton pulled the goalie yesterday, I knew it was going to happen. I'm watching up in the press box, and I'm like, yeah, this is a guarantee. And bang, it happens. And now all of a sudden, everybody starts doing the math, and you're asking me to try and figure out where it's going to be.
I know you well enough to know that you have done the math, and you've got two or three games that are going to be games that you're going to call that you're hoping it happens then. I'm just curious as to which two or three games you've honed in on.
The two or three. Early April at home with Chicago,
right?
Which would be a good thing for Monumental. Potentially at Columbus on the 12th, I think that is.
Right.
That would be a bad thing for Monumental. And then I believe, I wouldn't be surprised if it waits till the last game of the regular season in Pittsburgh. How about those for three? And I do think Monumental is going to have a piece of that. It's I think it's still a fluid situation with regard to who's broadcasting where and when. But and again, I continually say this, it's not about us, it's about Alex. But boy, oh boy, after 20 seasons of watching this guy work and calling, describing better than 90% of his goals, you know we want a piece of 894 and 895, and I hope it works out that way. I really do.
I mean, the current math based on average goals per game would have it the Chicago April 4th game. But yeah, it's a pace that doesn't seem logical for him to continue on. So you're
looking at the one game that... He's 39. Kevin, he's 39. There's nothing that's logical about this guy. This is superhuman.
Yeah. Real quickly, on the final goal yesterday, were you surprised that they pulled their goaltender down three?
No, when you have Draisaitl and McDavid, I don't think you're ever out of a game.
Okay.
And I don't think either of those guys were particularly dangerous yesterday. Draisaitl's amazing to me on the power play. McDavid was covered up pretty well, really well, I thought, by Pierre-Luc Dubois. Dubois doesn't get enough credit, Kevin, for not only the job that he does against the other top centers, but he requests the assignment. He and Spencer Carberry are in very good communication with each other about, hey, do you want this assignment tonight? Because yesterday's game was a home game. I can match. We can get you the hard match with McDavid. And Dubois says, give it to me. And he's done that against McKinnon and Matthews and Barkov and Aho and Crosby. I can go on and on. Hints. He loves this defensive matchup. He takes pride in it. I believe he held McDavid. He helped to help McDavid without a shot yesterday, which is, again, very unusual for arguably the game's most talented and best player in the league. So Dubois deserves a great deal of credit for that. But no, when you've got those two players who could very likely be two of the very best on the planet, you're never out of it, so you take a chance.
Do you think that the results of these two games over the weekend against teams that had players in the first, you know, four in the Four Nations and the Caps did not, do you think that there was a little extra incentive and, by the way, a little extra rest that benefited Washington?
I'm sure they benefited from the rest. I don't think they needed to be incentivized in any way. I think the league now understands where Washington is at 38-11-8 with the best mark in the league. Just how good this team is operating and how well they're performing. I'm glad they got a little bit of a break. I'm glad that there was no risk of injury. I hope nobody was going to turn an ankle on the beach. But sure. Do they take pride? Would they love to play for their respective nations? Absolutely. And I'm sure this will be there'll be another review process come Olympic time next year. But for now, the goals are obvious. The goals are to do extremely well as Washington Capitals and win as many games as possible in the regular season and see if they can add up to 16 in the playoffs.
Talking to Joe B, I'll come back to the Caps and Ovechkin in a moment. I just want your reaction to the Four Nations. I think I had you on right before, and you kind of talked about and explained what was going to happen. And by the way, it was a bit of a reveal for me. I'm not going to lie to you. But were you expecting this level of play, this intensity, the reaction? By the way, the championship game is the all-time highest-rated NHL game on television since the 70s. Were you expecting that going in? Just give me your overall big takeaways from this.
Kev, we really haven't had best-on-best international hockey since 2016, I want to say, was a World Cup of hockey. The last two Olympic Games in South Korea and in Beijing, the NHL did not send its players to those events. So I think a lot of the players and the nations that participated in the Four Nations were very much looking forward to seeing best against best again. And whenever you have Canada against the United States in hockey, the United States has made terrific strides at the under-18 level, at the world junior level. They're the two-time reigning world junior champions now, the United States. There are a number of the game's very, very best. And I want to say, of the NHL, Kevin, I think it's 28% is U.S.-born players, 41% Canadian players. So they are the two biggest chunks
right.
of the NHL. When they get together and you have the chance to put those lineups together and you just peruse, my God, they have that guy, that guy, that guy. The question for me was it going to be full blast intensity? And I guess we got the answer. It was spectacular to watch. And as someone who's had the great fortune, I called the Olympics in 2002. I called the Olympics in 2006. As a hockey fan, your heart beats out of your chest when you see these lineups together. And I'm glad. I'm so glad they caught it at the right moment in the sports calendar where they could dominate and take a lot of impressions around the country and around the world to say, wow, this was a great tournament. It was spectacular for the game. Extremely well done by the NHL and by the Players Association. Bravo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading different accounts of what this did, but basically it looks like the predominant reporting is that the 9.3 million that watched this championship game, it was the most watched non-Olympic hockey game on record because Nielsen didn't exist in the 70s when they had some. That's remarkable. I mean,
it's a great sign. It's a great sign, and it obviously points towards what we hope will be a tremendous Olympics in 26 in Milano Cortina. They've got it set up really nicely now, coming off of this Four Nations. You're going to have Olympics in 26. You're going to have the return of the World Cup in 28, and then you'll have another Olympic event. I want to say that's the Alps of France in 30. So they're doing, they realize, the NHL and I believe the Players Association realize just how great a spectacle it can be when you can put all this talent. And the league's in a great place, Kevin. The league's in a super place as far as young, talented players who have a ton of personality and an immense skill to show off the best parts of this game. And it does my heart well because I love it so much.
All right, before we come back to Ovechkin, the Caps right now are the President's Trophy leader. They've got 84 points. Winnipeg's won 9 in a row. They've got 1 point less. But the Caps are essentially running away with the one seed in the East at this point. But I know at one point when they were playing very well, maybe a month, month and a half ago, we talked, and you still said, look, there are still some teams that the Caps Absolutely. Would not be favored against, you know, in a best of 7. How do you view the Caps with regard to the rest of the Eastern Conference today?
Yeah, let me make a little amends to that. Are there teams that they wouldn't be favored against? That would be interesting by season's end. If they do monopolize the East the way they've done, I would think they would be a heavy favorite against whomever they play. Now, does that mean that they would be averse to completely getting an uncomfortable matchup in the first round? If you look at the wild cards right now, Detroit, Ottawa, Columbus, Boston, Rangers. Any of those five teams could make things uncomfortable, but the Caps would be favored. There are things that I can point to speed-wise for Detroit and Ottawa. Columbus is a team that's very much on the rise. Boston and Washington always give each other a really hard time. And the Rangers have maybe the best goalie on the planet, who you don't want to be playing 4 out of 7 times. But would that's discomfort. That's uncomfortable. You're going to be the favorite there. And if you do what you've done through the first 57 games, you should prevail there. Now, Carolina, Jersey. Carolina, terrific squad. Washington's going to be the favorite in that. It'll be uncomfortable again. Jersey, tremendous speed. But I think you get through and get out of your own bracket there if you take care of the wild card and you win the second round. When you get to the third, you're likely facing, I would guess, either Toronto or the defending Stanley Cup champions. And it would be fantastic. We're getting way ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah.
But I don't think Washington's going to be afraid of anybody. And I think there will be teams that don't want to have any business to do with Washington. With what the Caps have shown me, Kev, in the last, well, throughout the first 4 or 5 months of the season, they can beat you any way you want to do it. You want to play at 5-4, we'll do that. You want to play at 2-1, we'll beat you 2-1. And that, if you want to play a physical game, they're perhaps one of the biggest teams in the league. I don't think you want to do that. You want to play a speed game, they'll come up with some contraptions and some approaches. The coaches and the coaching staff will come up with some way to figure out how to beat your 4 out of 7. They're going to be a tough, tough out. I don't think there's a, I don't think they're a paper tiger. I really don't. I think they are going to give people a lot of problems.
Right now, I'm just looking, you know, BetMGM right now, Carolina and Florida are betting favorites ahead of the Caps to win the Eastern Conference. The Caps are third.
Those two teams are great. Kevin, those two teams are really good. So is Washington. I wouldn't be afraid of that matchup. Those two teams are very good. I can understand why the betting public, by the betting
odds makers, cognoscenti
would do that, but I still think Washington's right there with them.
Joe, why is Alex Ovechkin doing this year in the way he's doing it?
He's a very intelligent offensive hockey player. He knows where to be. And maybe he doesn't get there with the speed and the ferocity that he used to, but he knows where to go, and the puck finds him. And that tends to happen with highly skilled offensive players. And then he has a possession that I don't know if anybody has ever had a shot like that in the history of the game. And he'll be 90 years old and he'll be able to shoot the puck like this.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a fact of life.
Right.
And if you shooter get a team
shoot
in the right, shooter shoot. And this one shoots extraordinarily well. And there's a unique quality to his shot, I think, that comes from the type of equipment that he uses, the stick blade, the curvature that he has. NHL goalies tell me, facing him is like facing a tremendous baseball pitcher with an explosive slider. When Alex takes a shot, it doesn't come flat at them. It comes with a curve. It's dipping away. It's constantly moving. And it's very unusual, and it gives goalies fits, and it's going to for however long he chooses to play. I like the fact that he's getting goals in a different and more different ways than he used to.
How so?
Again, you'll find him in different spots on the rink. You'll see him scoring down the right wing. He scored a goal in Philadelphia before the break where it was off the rush down the right circle. And that's highly unusual for the pattern that you see. If you pop in an Alex Ovechkin highlight tape, it's usually not from that side of the rink. Beautiful goal. Nice finish. He'll get rebounds. He'll get deflections. He'll get tips. He'll be camped out more in front of the cage. They're moving him more on the power play. And if the Caps power play gets going, this record is going to fall. And it might fall this spring. I keep saying might. And then I watch yesterday and go, it's gonna.
Yeah, I think
he's like a great running back. What's that expression you guys have in football? He has a nose for the goal line. When this player sees a milestone, 500, 600, 700, 800, whose record am I breaking today? He tends to get such a nose for the goal line that he gets there in a hurry. It would not surprise me if he does it this spring. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
You know, one of the things just, you know, in the shooter's shoot vein, you know, he's not like Robert Horry in the NBA at a much older age could catch and spot up and knock down threes because the game is different. There's a physicality, you know, involved in the game. I guess my question would be, how much longer can he score at an elite or a very high level being just a shooter? How long can that go on for?
Is he just a shooter? That's the thing. See, he might not get to the spots as quickly as he used to, but he still gets to the spots. If he can't get there, then that shot won't be open for him. So he has the ability to find the spot or get rub off of picks and I'm not trying to make too much of a basketball analogy here, but there's ways for these guys to get open and he knows how to do it. And he doesn't need 15 feet of clearance to get that shot off. If you give him a half a foot, he'll do it. And he'll do it with pace and precision. His accuracy when he has the chance to sight a shot is brilliant. He'll pick corners with the best of them and do it at 90 miles an hour. It's just, it's spectacular to watch. It never grows old to me. And it starts when I watch him in practice. I watch him in practice and he's still ripping the nets off of the goal. Yesterday, Kevin, yesterday he could have easily, and I thought when I watched this player 20 years ago, I thought we were going to be lucky enough that we were going to be seeing him possibly break NHL records for goals in an individual game. I thought we would see a 5-goal game, a 6-goal game from Alex Ovechkin. He's done four different times. Yesterday he could have easily had 6. He's still getting chances, and when he does, on most days, he buries them.
The record is 7. Joe Malone?
Long time ago.
Yeah, 1920. In the last 50 years, it's Daryl Sittler who had... several have had 6, excuse me. Several have had
Sittler's
6.
Sittler's was an individual 10-point game. He had 6,
yeah, it was.
4 equals 10 in one game. Think of that.
Crazy.
I swear,
6 goals, 4 assists.
When I first saw Ovechkin, I thought that would be, you know, I've done 2 different 5-goal games. One of them was Sergei Fedorov against the Caps in Detroit in the mid to late 90s. And I thought Ovechkin was going to be doing that on the regular. 4 times 4, again, I'm appreciative for everything I've ever seen from the Great 8. But like yesterday, he had chances to go for 5 or 6. He had 9 shots total. He was shaking his head at 3 or 4 of them that probably should have gone. And that's, you know, would it be surprising to me if he does one of these sorts of 4 or 5s? No. There are times when it just doesn't make any sense that at age 39, he's still able to do this with all these young Tigers racing around and defending him. He knows where to be. He has very good setup people. That's the other thing. The guys who get him the puck have been doing so in a great manner. And that's critical for this player who, if he has that chance to pull the trigger, boy, he does. And he went from being completely, he didn't do anything against Pittsburgh in an 8-goal game. Right. And you sit there and you go, oh, well, maybe. And then the next day, boom, that's just what he's capable of.
Well, just a couple more booms, and you're going to get a chance to call the record breaker. I got to run. You're the absolute best. I love having these conversations with you. Really hoping it's a game in which you guys are on the call. Thanks, Joe.
Oh, you and me both. Count on it. Thanks.
Joe Beninati, everybody. We are done for the day. Chris Russell next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and 3-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Seriously, God, that one hurt badly. Still hurting. 12, 13 hours after it happened? 14 hours? 13 and a half hours after it happened? Good morning, I guess. Chris is in for Denton. Denton's off in Austin, Texas, having a bachelor weekend. He gets married next month. Not next month. April. Early April. You've got to be kidding me. 65 feet? Seriously? Look, I'm going to get to the thoughts on this game. Some of you, by the way, are just the worst. Oh, I tuned into my first Maryland game because Sheehan's been building him up and it wasn't anything like he described. You're right. It wasn't last night anything like what I've described. You've missed it. But I think it'll come back. Michigan State deserved to win the game. I will start with that. That shot, by the way, was not the Corey Lucius shot in terms of pain inflicted from the 2010 tournament when Draymond Green threw a pass over Summers' head as he ducked and Corey Lucius knocked down a three-point game-winning second-round NCAA tournament dagger to end the careers of Gravis Vasquez, Eric Hayes, and Landon Milbourne for a team that looked like it was poised to make a deep run. The whole draw had opened up. Michigan State went on to the Final Four. The winner of that game was probably going to go on to the Final Four, and Michigan State hit that shot. That's probably the most devastating Maryland loss of my adult life. As a child, when they lost NC State in the ACC final in the classic 74 ACC final, that was devastating. But what Corey Lucius did to us 15 years ago, this coming March, was horrible. And by the way, did you know, Maryland fans, that last night was the first game-winning shot at the buzzer that Michigan State has had since the Corey Lucius buzzer beater in 2010. You know, Maryland's had a couple against them too. Mello hit a three to beat them in College Park. Anthony Cowan, what he did to Michigan State in East Lansing back in 2020 with the three threes in the final, you know, minute and a half, was, it wasn't buzzer beater, but it was an incredible moment. Look, Maryland does not have a rival in the Big Ten. That's one of the big issues with Maryland basketball. I mean, there are a lot of deep-seated issues, and it's a long conversation as to what Maryland basketball is today versus what it was when Gary was here. And by the way, the team was in the ACC. You know, there's a lot there. But one of the real stark differences is that Maryland doesn't have rivals in basketball. Maryland is a basketball-first school. There are, what, a dozen of them in the Power Four? Maybe not even a dozen in the Power Four. We're basketball for the students and the alums. And by the way, the market in general has always been more important than football. Doesn't mean that football isn't important to a Maryland fan and a Maryland alum and a lifelong Maryland, you know, person. They've had great runs in football. Bobby Ross, Ralph Regan, and Locks has had some success. I mean, they won three straight bowl games after being essentially a near-dead program. He resurrected it. But Maryland's a basketball-first school. Everybody knows that. And anybody that would say the opposite is an idiot. And but the program has changed. And one of the reasons it's changed is it doesn't have a rival. In the ACC, obviously Duke was a massive rival, but so were North Carolina, Virginia, NC State. There was a long 60-year tradition of playing these schools. And it wasn't all 60 years where it mattered. But pretty much from the 1970s until Maryland left the ACC, I was looking at, you get stuff on social media, and Cliff Tucker, God rest his soul because he passed away a few years ago, Cliff Tucker hit an unbelievable buzzer-beating shot to beat Georgia Tech 15 years ago during that 2010 season. It was Georgia Tech, okay? The place was packed to the rafters. Now, Maryland was ranked. They were a really good team. That was the year that Gravis Vasquez won ACC Player of the Year, and Maryland shared with Duke an ACC championship regular season. That's also the year they got knocked out in the second round by Michigan State. And Corey Lucius. But the stretch there, they had games against Clemson and Georgia Tech. I mean, the place, it was impossible to get into the joint. And those weren't really perceived rivals, but you still had a history with those teams. So now we've been in the Big Ten for 11 years, and we've played in some pretty big games, and we've finished very high in the Big Ten and won or shared in a Big Ten regular season title in 2020. But over the course of time, and I've mentioned this when, you know, Turge and his run ended, Mark Turgeon was the winningest coach in the Big Ten when he was the coach of Maryland in the Big Ten. He was the third winningest coach behind Izzo and Matt Painter. All right, Maryland won a lot in the Big Ten, a lot in the regular season. Not enough in the Big Ten tournament. Understood. Not enough in the NCAA tournament. I get it. But Maryland's been a very strong addition to Big Ten basketball, but still, it does not have a rival. But I'll tell you what, man, for me, over the years, and part of it is some of the games they played when they weren't in, you know, conference matchup games. Maryland's played Michigan State, and they played them a lot prior to joining the Big Ten. They played them in the 2003 NCAA tournament as the defending champs. Maryland is the last team currently in the Big Ten to have won a national championship. That's right. Not one Big Ten team has won a national championship since Maryland won in 2002. Obviously, Maryland was an ACC school. The Big Ten team that last won a title that's always been a Big Ten team was Michigan State when they won it in 2000, right? 2000. And then Duke won it in 01. Maryland won it in 02. But in the 2003 defending championship season, Maryland lost in the Sweet 16 to Michigan State on a shot with 4.7 seconds to go, and then Blake had a wide-open look from three, you know, about 6-7 feet behind the three-point line, but a pull-up three at the buzzer to move Maryland to the Elite Eight as the defending champs, and it was just a bit long and off. And then Maryland met Michigan State again in the tournament in 2010 and lost on a buzzer beater. And then Maryland's first game in the Big Ten was at Michigan State in December of 2014. Dez Wells hit an impossible shot at the buzzer in regulation to force overtime. Maryland won in double overtime. They've had a lot of games against Michigan State that have felt big. They've played them twice in the Big Ten semifinals, lost both of them. Mello beat them at the buzzer. Cowan had the memorable finish. One of the all-time regular season memorable finishes was Anthony Cowan in East Lansing in February of 2020. You know, the season that last for Maryland had a chance to really go a long way. The next year they lost in the second round. 2 years ago they lost in the second round. Both to Bama, by the way. The one team in the Big Ten that I have as a lifelong Terp, that I have just a little bit of a feeling for, is Michigan State. Now, do I think they feel the same way about Maryland? No. We're newcomers still. 11 years into this thing, we are still newcomers. That league, look, this is not specific to Maryland. This is happening everywhere, right? With all of the conference changes and reshuffling, rivalries have been lost everywhere, and the feelings of fans towards the games they play are different. They just are. You know, sorry. But Iowa on a Sunday afternoon in 2025 isn't the same, apparently, as Georgia Tech was in 2010. You've been playing Georgia Tech for 30 years. So, last night, though, man, you know, I've heard the game already described in so many different ways. Certainly was not an expected style of play. You know, these were two high-flying, high-scoring teams. Both good defensive teams. Don't get me wrong. Both of these teams were good defensive teams coming in. Michigan State was on a roll. Maryland was on a roll. This was one of the bigger games here in February in the Big Ten. There are more to come, and really the big game is now Michigan State, Michigan to end the season. That game will be in East Lansing. I think Michigan State's better than Michigan. They went on the road Friday night and beat them there. But this style of that game last night, wow, was that a defensive game, man. That was outstanding defensive basketball. If you want to describe it as terrible offensive basketball, what are you talking about? These two teams are great on offense. That was incredible defense. And that's where I would start on the game last night. And by the way, if you want to weigh in on last night's Maryland-Michigan State game, if you were there, I was there last night. The atmosphere was fabulous, fabulous. But 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980, if you want to jump on and give any thoughts about what you saw last night with Maryland's loss to Michigan State on a 65-foot three-pointer by Trey Holloman at the buzzer. But here's where I would start. Michigan State deserved the game. They were the better team last night. They were the better defensive team of two teams that played excellent defense. Man, their pick-and-roll defense was outstanding. They are deeper than Maryland. They have a star in Jace Richardson. There's no doubt about that. He is, as a freshman, he is now really starting to come into his own. And I think truly is one of the stars and one of the freshman stars in the game. Their freshman star, Jace Richardson, actually played better than Maryland's freshman star, Derek Queen. Derek Queen looked a little tight. Maryland looked tight early on. You know, the place was electric. I give everybody a lot of credit last night. The 6:30 starts are the worst. They should not schedule 6:30 starts. Maryland, well, until the LA teams moved in to the Big Ten, was the only major metropolitan market in the Big Ten where you had legitimate, sizable fan base, you know, reaction. Rutgers, you know, that's, by the way, that's not New York metro, obviously. It's Jersey. Northwestern is in Chicago or in a suburb of Chicago, but they have a smaller gym. It's not the same thing. And it's really hard. You know, it was an hour and 20 minutes for me from Upper Northwest to get to College Park. Walked in shortly after tip. I mean, but the place was, the students did a phenomenal job. Most of you understand this. I've talked about it for years if you're not familiar with it, but Maryland people are. There really isn't, other than maybe a big Caps playoff game, there's no other atmosphere in town that matches College Park for a big Maryland basketball game when they're good. And they've got a big-time opponent, and it's a big-time game. And last night, the atmosphere did not disappoint. Was it the best I've ever seen there? No. Because there wasn't, you know, you didn't have a lot of the runs. It was a grinded-out game. But first, Michigan State was awesome defensively. They were really good. They're deeper. They have seven-footers. They have big dudes that can move. I thought their pick-and-roll defense, every time, whether it was Gillespie or Miguel or Rice, the way they ran guys back towards half court in their pick-and-roll defense, I thought was outstanding. I thought their post-defense was outstanding on Reese, on Queen. This was not a great game for either one of Maryland's big men. Each of the two big guys turned the ball over three times. Michigan State's defense forced reversed a lot of that. You know, Rodney Rice really, more than anybody else, kept Maryland close, although I give Maryland's defense a ton of credit. I thought Michigan State missed more easy shots than Maryland did. I thought more of Maryland's shots were contested. Fewer of the Michigan State shots, a lot of them were contested. I thought Maryland played outstanding defense too. These two teams combined to go 8 for 35 from behind the arc. I would say of those 35 attempts, I would say every bit of three quarters of them were contested in a major way. Michigan State won the basketball game shooting 33.8% from the field. What does that mean? Well, it means either Maryland stunk on offense or Michigan State was great on defense, or a combination of both. I think it was more Michigan State was great on defense. Every single one of those guys defend. I've always loved Izzo. Anybody that's ever listened to me over the years, you know how much I think Izzo is the best that there. He and Painter have been the two best in the league. And I just love the grittiness and the toughness of Michigan State year in and year out. I mean, you can't play for that dude unless you are tough. And they've got another tough team, even though it's not a star-laden team, although Richardson, and apparently he was cramping up at the end and, you know, he's coming in and out. But I thought Michigan State's defense and their offensive rebounding were the two difference makers in the game. I give them much more of the credit for the win than Maryland not playing well or being off offensively for the loss. Now, from a Terp standpoint, excellent defensively much of the night. Now, towards the second half, whether it was Akins or whether it was Richardson or whether it was Fears or whether it was Holloman himself, they were getting a bit too close inside the paint, you know, getting the matchups they wanted, getting defenders on their back, getting close to the rim. They missed some of those shots. I also thought Maryland got the benefit of a ton of calls down the stretch. I mean, they came back from 55-48 down at the free throw line, and a couple of those calls were questionable, including after the turnover on the press, where Rodney Rice did a good job of picking off that pass by Holloman, and then Gillespie got fouled by Holloman. That looked like a clean pick. I watched the game back when I got home last night, as painful as that was. But I thought that Maryland did a nice job. You know, Maryland shot 31.3% from the floor. This is a very good shooting team. They shot 20% from behind the arc. They've been shooting at 46% recently. They were 4 for 20. So for them to have the ball in their hands at the end of the game with the clock winding down and the score tied, that's a testament that they were still in that game despite not being able to score for the first time, you know, in months. Really, since the Washington game. Now, the end. Maryland gets the stop, and Gillespie has the ball, and there is no doubt that he took the shot too early. With that said, I'm not going to kill him for this. You know, you lost on a 60 to 65 foot shot at the buzzer. You know, sure, if he takes that shot 1 second later, there's no opportunity for that. But let me just tell you, Gillespie didn't have a clean look the entire night. That was about as clean a look as he got. I would have preferred that he drive the ball in that situation. He had been, you know, feasting at the free throw line. They had given him a bunch of calls. There was an opportunity to drive the basketball. But we've seen, you know, Gillespie's an excellent shooter. An excellent shooter. And we've seen game winners, Mello and Cowan, guys in that building pull up and take deep threes. And sometimes you're like, what? And then they knock it down. In the moment when Gillespie took it, now it was a frenzy after Maryland got the stop. You know, I didn't really see that he took it with 4.8 or went into the motion, you know, at 5 left. Obviously, in hindsight, you know, being 2020, you certainly would have loved him to have driven the ball. First of all, that takes a little bit more time. You got a chance to get fouled. You got a chance to get Miguel's defender to, you know, slough off, and you can make that play to Miguel. It seemed, though, really, when you consider what you watched last night, that was about as open a look as Gillespie had. I can't kill him for that. 60 feet, by the way, from I had the perfect angle. I saw when it left his hands that it was good if it went, because I saw that the clock still was, you know, tenths of seconds left. And right when it left his hand, because I was kind of at a kind of behind him, or at an angle, but behind him, but I could see it was online. And then you still don't expect it to go in. But it did. And the Terps lost. Look, this is still a good basketball team. I watched Izzo's press conference late last night. You know, Izzo doesn't really do what Krzyzewski used to do, which was obnoxious. You know, when Duke would come in and win, you know, a hard-fought, close game in front of that kind of a crowd, Krzyzewski would tell everybody how great Juan Dixon was, and Steve Blake, and Gary's the best, and the crowd is phenomenal, and the whole thing, and how great Maryland is. I mean, that was his MO. I mean, he would just completely, you know, bathe the opponent that he just beat in flowers afterwards. That's not Izzo's style at all. But Izzo said last night, quote, this team is going to win a lot of games. It's a really good basketball team. And it is. It was an odd way that the way the game unfolded. Remember, in these conference games, even though Maryland hasn't played Michigan State this year, they're very familiar with one another. The coaching in the Big Ten, I've been talking about this for years, is so good, and teams are so well scouted. And so there's a lot of that in these games, especially when you get late in the year and you got a lot of tape. You know, everybody knows what you're running. It's different in the NCAA tournament, especially in the early rounds. Two good basketball teams last night. Not the prettiest of games, because it felt very much like a rock fight. But man, if you like defense, it was excellent. I thought Maryland's defense was outstanding. I thought Michigan State's defense was incredible, because Maryland's been impossible to guard for basically 6-7 weeks. Impossible to guard. All right, if you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980. What's your takeaways from Maryland's loss to Michigan State? Was this some sort of wake-up call as to, well, they're going to get beat up by, you know, a physical, aggressive, long, athletic, deep kind of a team? Or was it just one night? 301-230-0980, your call's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. Ryan Fowler from the Draft Network is going to jump on with us in about 25 minutes. He says and reported that Washington's going to meet with a certain running back in Indianapolis, like the best one in the draft. We'll talk draft with Ryan Fowler at 12:30. I had Ted Leonsis on my podcast. It was a lengthy conversation. He was great. He was very generous with his time. And I'm going to play a couple of chunks of it on the show, one today, one tomorrow. But you can hear the whole thing in its entirety at thekevinsheehanshow.com or wherever you get my podcast. Talked about a lot of things. Caps, Ovi's Chase, you know, how he felt about the reaction to the announcement, you know, months ago about Potomac Yards and how he dealt with that. But the chunk that I'm going to play for you right now deals with what the Wizards are doing. You know, they finally decided to do it in a way in which it kind of tears the whole thing down, accumulates draft choices, and tries to hit it big in the draft for a couple of years. And hopefully they land on a transformational player. Of course, it means a lot of losing in the interim. So this is the part that I wanted to play for you. It started this way. Now, you've entered into a process, which, by the way, I'm in favor of, that we all hope eventually produces something big. But there's pain in getting there, and I'm wondering, because you're a basketball guy. I don't know that everybody understands that. You know, growing up where you grew up in New York, basketball was a love for you. How are you dealing with this right now? Is it hard for you to watch this team that doesn't win really at all, but understand that it's part of a bigger picture? How are you dealing with the night in and night out right now of an 82-game season where your team doesn't have a chance?
I am very, very excited because, you know, I participated actively in the rebuild with risk with the Capitals, you'd almost say twice, and I've seen very positive outcomes on it. Our WNBA team, you know, Mike Thibeau retired. He was the winningest coach in the WNBA. Our team made the playoffs, I think, 12 of 13 years. We went to the finals, and then we won a championship. Our esports teams are the best in the world. Our building, right, what we just did with the inauguration, we were called the world's most important arena. Never before had a president, vice president, all the cabinet members, leaders of the Senate and Congress, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, it didn't matter. They were all here. This is a really, really important city, and we have built really world-class franchises. We just haven't gotten it right in the NBA. It's difficult. You know, when I bought the team, we were not very good. We traded all of our players, and we won the first-round pick in the draft, and we got John Wall. And then we drafted Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. We had three max players, all young players. The team was going through the playoffs. I think we had 49 wins. We lost to Boston in a game seven.
Yep.
We were turning it around. We had room to sign good free agents.
Great.
And then, frankly, injuries really hurt. Otto Porter, his hip. But we had to pay Otto the max because he signed a term sheet to go to Brooklyn. John Wall just had a history of injuries, and he wasn't the same player that we drafted with that great upside. The reason he got a Supermax deal from us was he qualified
right
to be a Supermax by being, you know, All-NBA and X-time All-Star and the like. Brad Beal, who was a top three pick in the draft, and there isn't one player that we missed on those three, you know, when you went through the draft. Like, John Wall was clearly the number one pick in that draft. Evan Turner went
right
second.
Well, we don't have to talk about the 2011 draft.
Yeah, okay. You know, Jan Vesely is not someone that, you know, they whiffed on. We
right
whiffed on. But we went young, and we had upside, and injuries derailed us. And we still had a very high payroll, and we made some trades, and we just never put it together. And, you know, even the last year before we said, I need to move on and not be stuck in the middle and not perform to middle standards, right? We had Porzingis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Porzingis gets traded to Boston. He wins a championship the next year,
right?
He's a very unique player. And so what I decided to do was, you can't take half steps. And so we totally rebuilt our front office. They totally rebuilt the coaching staff. And they put in a philosophy, and their Sam Presti, they're part of the Sam Preston
yes
tree.
We know that. Yep.
They're very creative. They're very young. They're very innovative. They're not shy about trading. And, you know, I can't even count anymore.
I know.
We have.
Well, yeah, I think it's something like 16 second rounders or something like that.
Yep.
But so how, though, are you dealing with this on a night-in and night-out basis?
I had the greatest time last night. It was awesome.
Because
was
they won.
Brooklyn.
Because they won?
Well, what? No, I had a great time at the Milwaukee game the other
night,
right?
And
we played great, and we lost because we're young and we didn't have a closer. Last night, Marcus Smart played, and the young guys were playing well, but Marcus drew a charge against a young player in Brooklyn, and then we came down, hit a three, and then we had a steal defense, and we scored foul shot. We win the game. Marcus was running off the court. I said, this is going to love this. I said, welcome to D.C. Thank you. And the game turned on you drawing the charge. And he looked right at me and he said, yes, it did.
You know, look, he's the grandfather on the team at this point at 31 years old or whatever he is. All right, so is
And next year's draft.
I was going to ask you about
that. Draft.
I know.
Next year's draft and the year after's draft are very, very strong.
Ted.
So if you were not going to be competitive,
These are the years. This upcoming draft in June of 25, Ted, will have a player at the top of it that many believe could be a transformative franchise changer. That player is Duke's Cooper Flagg. You're a basketball fan. How much of Cooper Flagg have you watched? Have you been paying attention to?
He's a really, really good prospect, and there's a lot of that's what's exciting. There's four or five players that could be difference makers, but they're prospects, right? So you know, we have people that, you know, Troy Weaver is. We have great staff now. Michael and Will have built an unbelievable staff. You know, Travis is a great talent evaluator. Troy Weaver is a great talent evaluator. Detroit's doing pretty good right now. They mostly young kids, players that Troy brought in there, right?
Yeah.
So they're really, really excited about the depth here.
Okay.
And I think that there's three, four, maybe five players that can, you know, be in your rotation. But the NBA, you know, Victor Wembanyama is a, you know, I've never seen a player like him.
I agree.
He played the other night.
It was
unbelievable, right?
Yeah. Honestly, the definition of an athlete unicorn. Hopefully he gets healthy, because that seems a bit scary, the situation he has. No, look.
But the days of, like, in the NFL, you get a unicorn quarterback, and the team improves and goes deep into the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's not happening anymore. Victor couldn't do that with San Antonio.
No.
Last year or this year, right? I mean, and you play a lot of minutes in the NBA, but you know, a quarterback in the NFL can turn the franchise around quickly. Alex Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, their first couple of years, they didn't make the team championship caliber, right? You play 20, 25 minutes in the NHL. LeBron was playing 40 minutes in the NBA. It took many years to make it great. And so you know, it's different sport by sport. But if you get enough, you know, the philosophy that Michael and the staff have is you got to get at bats. You know,
we
had three first-round picks last year.
Yeah, understood.
I think all three kids are going to be in the league, right?
I think
all three kids are going
to
play.
But you need to win a title. The last NBA team to win a title without a clear-cut top five superstar on the roster, the 2004 Pistons. That's how far back you have to go. So the swings, I think we all understand, you got to keep taking swings, and the more swings you get, the better chance you'll land on that transcendent, transformational, franchise-changing, you know, player like Washington did with Jaden Daniels in football. So I think everybody's, I am at least, I'm all for this process because this is the one.
Yeah. And what was our choice? right? Because you can manage to the cap, but bring in one free agent.
Yeah.
And in the new NBA, you need depth. You need 7, 8, 9 players. You look at, our pace of play is what I'm watching for and is exciting. Our ability to play positionless basketball, which is all the rage. I mean, we have a guard who's 6'8", right? And you need long bodies. You need players who can hit threes. You need players who can score in transition. The hardest thing in the NBA is to get players to play good team defense. That was the thing I was watching with Marcus Smart last night. The guy didn't shut up on defense. Yak. It was like,
Gotta talk on defense. Yep.
You gotta talk on defense. ISO. I got him low, right? Go through the pick. I'm going to the three. I mean, he was like a defensive coach on there. And you could tell he was enjoying mentoring the young kids. One player was having a tough game, and the two vets, Chris Middleton, kept going up to him and say, shake it off. Keep your head up. Don't talk to the ref. You haven't earned the ref's respect to listen to you. Don't save your energy, right? I mean,
yeah.
It was like a clinic watching those guys. Well, the experience that the young kids are getting in this rebuild is really going to fortify
them. It's awesome.
As they grow up. Yeah.
Is there, of the truly young players, you know, whether it's Bilal or any of the three first-rounders from this year, you know, Alex, Kaishan, or Bub, are any of them, do you think, you know, have you landed? I'll just tell you,
I think all four of those are going to be right. Rotation players,
yes.
They're NBA
okay.
players. That's really good. I think Sarr is a sleeper in that he's so big, he's so long, he can run for days, he can rebound. You know, he's working on his three-point shot. He was the second pick in the draft. Defensively, he has natural gifts. I think he could be a really good player, but if you add another really good player with him, he becomes a better player, right? I think Bilal has things in his repertoire that he pulls out and you go, wow, where did that come from? He's shooting threes. He played really, really well yesterday shooting threes. He got big steals. He gets rebounds. He can jump through the building. He's got really big hands, really long. That's what you want, right? That's what I mean. Oklahoma City right now has probably the best team in the NBA. They've got 9 or 10 high draft picks that are all playing positionless basketball and one guy who's MVP quality. But he couldn't do it alone, right? He's in a rotation. And that's what you've got to do. And the only way you can build a team like that is to have a lot of first-round picks and a lot of draft capital.
How much NBA do you watch?
I watch a lot of NBA. I watch a lot of NHL. The thing that's different about the NBA and the NHL is thus. The best teams playing the best basketball that go into the playoffs
win.
Usually are the teams
yes.
that are the best teams
right.
and win the championship.
That's right.
The NHL, it's really
random.
It's different, right? I mean,
yeah.
I remember a couple of years ago, you know, Philadelphia makes the playoffs the last game of the season
right.
by winning in overtime, and they're in the finals, right? L.A., the Kings, they're out of it. New Year's Day, they rally, they make the playoffs the last game of the season, and they win the Stanley Cup by winning 4 7-game series.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Look,
right?
you said for many years, and I talked about this, you said, we're going to work to put together a team that wins enough games to be a part of the playoffs every year. Yep. But in that sport, that's what you have to do, because anybody can win it once you get there. And you guys had a lot of bad luck with some really good teams. You had some bad puck luck along the way. So thank God what happened in 2018 happened again, and maybe it's in the cards. But you're 100% right. The NBA in a best of seven, the best team pretty much wins.
You want us to win the President's Trophy this season?
Why? Because if I said yes, will it jinx it?
Well, I mean, someone asked me that the other day. I said, oh, so what do you want us to do?
Well, right.
Go into the locker room and say,
yeah,
we want you to lose so that we don't have the best record.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's like any competitive.
Right.
But I believe in the curse. I will say, you get a President's Trophy, and I would get mine, and I would hide it in the closet, and I never mentioned it. And then we won the Stanley Cup in a year that we didn't have our best team. We had some President's Trophy winning teams that were awesome, right? And if they had won Stanley Cup that year, you'd say, oh, they were one of the best teams in
2010.
Yep, there you go. But after we won the Stanley Cup, I brought the President's Trophies out, and I displayed them proudly, because it says we won a Stanley Cup, we had the second most playoff appearances in 25 years, and in three of those years, we had the best record during the regular season.
Right.
That's all a part of your body of work as owners. But unless you win the Cup, and that's what's so clarifying, the Mystics, they won a ring. The Nationals, they won the World Series. The Commanders, they've won Super Bowls, right? You've got to win the ring. You've got to win the championship. And then the body of work goes in the context.
Thank God you got yours in 2018, because those President's Trophies, which actually are reflective of real accomplishment, we'd be mocking you over that.
It's unfair, but it comes with the territory, right? It's like, okay, tell me, in anything for you in high school, were you best in the class three times? No.
Right.
You didn't have the best grades. You didn't have the most points, whatever. But I get it.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, let's win another cup.
Sure.
Right?
Back to Cooper Flagg for a moment.
Yep.
Have you penciled out, you're a data person, you're a projection person, have you penciled out what Cooper Flagg might mean for the Wizards just in incremental revenue?
No.
You haven't?
I haven't done that, no.
Don't you think that the first American
he might not even declare for the draft. And remember, because trust the process, change the way the lottery system works.
I know.
Okay?
14%.
And we could finish with the worst record and pick fifth.
Yep. I get that.
Okay?
Let's hope that doesn't happen because I honestly think...
But the odds say...
I hear you. Yeah, it's only a 14% chance. I get that. I just think that...
Who do we thank for that, by the way? Who should we say thank you, Josh Harris?
Josh Harris, yeah, exactly.
No, Josh is my buddy.
I know, but that's why it changed.
It did, right? And look at them now, right? I mean, what, they've lost eight in a row?
God,
it's so sad watching it.
It's a disaster. But this is the kind of player, though, that when I've, sort of dreamt about, the Wizards land on that transcendent player, and it comes at number one. They might be cut. Might come at number five. Who knows? We look at Giannis. We look at Kawhi. We've seen Jokic, the best player in the NBA, arguably went in the second round. But Cooper Flagg, forget the talent, which is unmistakable. And I'm not putting him in the Wembanyama class, because He's not. Well, you're right about young players. It's an old players league. He's going to win titles, though. It certainly looks like they're going to be a major contender. But I think about what Cooper Flagg would do for your franchise. You know, the first American-born white player to be drafted number one overall since Kent Benson. A Dookie, for starters. That makes it even a little bit more sort of brings a cachet to it. The best player in America right now. He's going to win National Player of the Year. I think the atmosphere, even though I would understand and basketball people would understand, it's going to take some time, but that would be an exciting get. Don't you think that would be much different than any of the other opportunities you've had over the years drafting really high?
Yeah, it's really inappropriate for an owner of a team that doesn't have a good record to talk about who in the draft. You don't know when you're picking. And there's so much still to happen for the rest of the year. And, you know, we also have a WNBA draft, right? We made news yesterday. We traded.
Yeah, okay. But it might be inappropriate, but you're a basketball person, and
yeah,
this is the
problem. You're not going to get me there for a headline that says.
I'm not trying to get you there for a headline. I want to know if you're watching Cooper
Flagg. You're on the show again.
I want to know if you're watching and dreaming about somebody like Cooper Flagg. Maybe it's Ace Bailey or Dylan Harper.
I didn't go to the game in Maryland.
Which game?
When Duke plays Maryland, I didn't go to the game. Duke, we had lots of scouts there, right?
Duke didn't play Maryland. Duke doesn't play Maryland.
No, yeah. Duke will play Maryland.
No, we're right? Not in the ACC
Rutgers
anymore.
Plays, right?
We've been in the Big Ten for 11 years now. We haven't
11 years.
Yeah.
I saw that Bernhardt, that Muir, by the way, just stepped down in Stanford. After winning 30 championships across all sports, he was Georgetown's athletic director, right? And he moved the team from West, and it's a big part of the issues that we're all facing with NIL and in college sports, right? You don't know who's playing in what.
No, it's true. It's true.
Groups, right?
Well, look, you're a Georgetown guy, and you didn't even know that Maryland was in the Big Ten.
What game did I watch the other night?
They played Illinois in the Garden. Yeah.
I watched that game.
Yeah, they looked pretty good.
What was that? Yeah,
that was not
the whole team looked pretty good.
That was an out of conference kind of late season made for TV matchup. All right, let's move on. And you can hear Ted for an hour plus on my podcast, thekevinsheehanshow.com, or anywhere else you get a podcast. I'll play some of it tomorrow as well. We'll play his reaction, the fan reaction to the announcement that they were going to move to Potomac Yards, and also what he thought of the skin season that just happened. So you'll hear some of that tomorrow. When we come back, Ryan Fowler from the Draft Network. Washington is interviewing the top running back in the draft. Find out about that and a lot more next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team 980.com. Download the free and Odyssey app.